And such a phenomenal story to tell you that I'm not going to give anything away. I'm just going to keep you all in suspense. So sit back and a very loud applause for Mrs. Aliza Hugo.
Thank you.
I know you're going to do that. We're looking forward.
Good evening. I don't know if I'm the highlight after watching those beautiful girls. I personally attended a high school for dance, and I never saw such a beautiful production of girls that age. It was stunning. So for whoever put it together, I also sew. Whoever made the costumes, did the hair, it was so beautifully done. So yasher koach to, I know it was so many women who did that. It was really stunning. Beautiful job, girls. Okay. First, I'm going to start a little bit with what I do right now. I'll back up and then go forward and tell you my story. Right now, I'm a Rebbetzin coach in North America. There's an organization called Ner La'elef that trains young Rebbetzins, rabbis and Rebbetzins as couples, trains them for 2 years part-time while they're getting smicha in Eretz Yisrael, trains them in French, in Spanish, in Russian, in Hebrew, and in English, 5 different training programs, not all in one. And then they send the couples out all around the world to do kiruv or rabbanis, whatever they do in different communities. My job is to follow up with the women in North America. So I fly from community to community once a month or every 3 weeks to visit with a young Rebbetzin and help her grow in her job. I teach her how to teach Torah or help her transition in her role. Her husband used to be in Kollel. Whatever it is, I help her. I have so many different questions. Everything from, is my child developing correctly, to I'm lonely, I miss my friends in Eretz Yisrael, to how do I tell that person they're not actually Jewish, I'm not sure I want to learn with them, to how can I create this program, whatever it is, all kinds. I'll tell you one of the saddest stories I got from a Rebbetzin called me up, and she called me in tears. She said, I just have to tell you, I just fundraised for a Gioris that she's getting married to buy a shetel, and I raised all the money, and I took her shopping, and I took her to get it cut, and she looks beautiful in it. But there's nobody I could tell that I can't afford a shetel myself, and I need a new one so badly, so I just called you to cry. So sometimes I get stories like that too. All kinds of things. So that's what I do now. But how did I get into this job? And then I'll tell you my story. So I'll tell you the story that I'm going to tell you tonight, but not my story. So just one piece. I can't believe that I do the job that I do, because I wasn't born Jewish. I'm a 13th generation American, and actually my family came from England in the 1630s to America. So I have a long story to tell about America and how I became what I am. But I'm a Gioris. I converted when I was 16 years old, became interested in Yiddishkeit when I was 14 years old, and I still love it passionately. And so that's why I love to share it. But the reason why I'm telling you that is because you have to understand that for my story. So I converted at 16. I went to Eretz Yisrael. I learned in a yeshiva. It was really a yeshiva, not a seminary at the time. I didn't know as much then as I know now, but I'm thankful for the time I spent there. I learned there for 2 years. I even served in the army in a religious unit for 2 years. And then I went back to the States. I met my husband in Eretz Yisrael. We went back to the States. We had to wait until he graduated law school to get married. His parents made us wait, so I met him at 19, got married at 21, had my first baby at 22, and then Baruch Hashem, we were benched, and we had 6 kids in 7.5 years. So Elisheva, Avi, Sara Uri, the twins, Aviva and Dani. And I had this picture of this beautiful Haredi family that I'm going to marry. I moved from the Mizrahi world, more into the modern Orthodox world, more into the Haredi world. I was educated with Tehila Yeager, who really helped bring me into more into the Haredi world. We went to the Shar Yashuv bungalow colonies for 6 summers, and I learned all kinds of things. And I sent my kids to right-wing schools. No TV in the house. And I had the picture of exactly what I wanted to raise, these beautiful, firm children. And I started out on my project, trying to raise the children exactly how I wanted. My oldest one, Elisheva, is a real treasure, Baruch Hashem. And I think Hashem, in a way, tricked me into having a lot of kids by giving me a perfect child first. He said, don't you want a lot of these? Turns out the other ones gave me a lot more room to grow, many projects to grow through. But she was my first one and very precious. When my son wrote an essay about each one of the children in the family, he had to compare them all to a piece of fruit. So my husband's a round guy and aging, so he was a coconut, you know, round and just a few hairs left. But my daughter Elisheva was a banana. Because a banana is very sneeze, always covered, and has no seeds, she's sweet through and through. So that's my daughter Elisheva. So when Elisheva was 4, she looked at me and she said, "Ima, who am I going to marry?" So I told her, thinking I would be able to arrange this for her, "Don't worry. When it's time for you to get married, I will find just the right boy for you." I had no idea what I was getting myself into, but I knew I wanted to raise a Haredi family, and I knew that that's how Haredi mothers find children, find spouses for their children, is they find them. So I took that responsibility, and I told her, "I will find just the right boy for you. Send her to the right schools," and she's a beautiful pleated skirt, ponytail, tucked-in shirt girl. I think her moment of chutzpah in high school, too. Once I had to tell her to part her hair properly, because it was a little messy. And another time when she learned how to drive, you know, we always teach our, a parenting technique is to give our children choices, but to give them choices that we agree with. So you don't say, "Do you want to get dressed?" You say, "Would you like to wear the red shirt or the blue shirt?" Right? So she came into me once when she was 17. She said, "Ima, could I borrow the car now or in an hour?" So I said, "No." "That works with kids, but not with your mother. It's, may I please borrow the car if it's convenient for you?" So that was the chutzpah of this child, right? That was it. Off she went to Eretz Yisrael to seminary. Before she went, she was unsure about musical choices. She only listened to average Jewish music. She didn't ever watch movies. She was very careful in that. And we talked about, now that she's out of high school, it's time for her to start making her own choices, that she needs guidance, but she's her own person. Fine. Off she goes to Eretz Yisrael. She goes to seminary, comes back, and she looks at me and she says, "Okay, Ima, I'm ready to get married. Time for you to find that boy for me." And then I was a much more grown-up person. I realized, how am I possibly going to do that? Now I know, like, a little bit about the shidduch market, and we don't fit in it at all. Ger mother, strike. Lawyer father, strike. Balei tshuva, strike. We're not wealthy, strike. How am I possibly going to find the best guy possible for this treasure daughter that I have, somebody who davens with kavana so carefully? She's really so tznius and so special. Shmeras o'naim. Like, I was naim. How am I going to find the perfect boy for her who loves Torah and wants to learn and make it center of his life, not because it's the thing to do, but because it's really him, like it's really her? How am I going to find that? So I decided the smart thing to do is send her back to Eretz Yisrael for another year, because maybe there people will get to know her, see how sweet she is, not really see our other kids who are not as sweet. They're great kids, but they're not like her. So maybe they'll get to see her and she'll find just the right person there for her. So I sent her back for another year, and I think maybe she had one date that year. But she came back, and we decided definitely she needs to go back for a third year. So off she goes again, and now she's 20. Right? It's really time. So before she left for that third year, I told her, Hashem made my shidduch. That's how I met my husband. It's a whole different story, but Hashem made it directly. I thought maybe Hashem will rescue me. Maybe he'll make the shidduch directly. So I told her, before she went back to Israel for the third time, to Eretz Israel, I said, "You know, Elisheva, if you go to any friends' houses for Shabbos and Yantif, and they have an older brother at the table, I give you permission to talk to him." She looked at me like I fell out of the sky. She said, "Ima, I would never talk to a boy that you didn't check out first." And I thought, oh my gosh, I like really succeeded here. I don't know, Ali, how did I raise this child? That's like, there's such a gap between us. How am I possibly going to find just the right boy for her? That year she goes on to quite a few dates. One, she even dated 7 times, which was definitely like things going in the right direction, and we went to a dating coach, but just it wasn't clicking for her. And I told her that, you know, I'll check out the person, but you have to actually go out and see if it clicks. And it wasn't clicking, but it wasn't not clicking either. So they were told to go out again and again, but there was no click. Finally, she stopped. She called me up and she said, "Ima, I hate dating. I never, ever want to go on another date again. I completely trust you. Just find the right boy and tell me who I should marry." So I said, "Elisheva, I'm not Hasidish. Like, I don't know the whole world, and I don't know all the families, and I don't have those kinds of connections. I can't offer you that. I'm really sorry. All I can do is vet the boy properly, and you'll go out with him and see if there's a click. But that's as far as I can get you. I can't pick the right boy for you. I don't know. Okay, she comes back for the summer after her third year. And she was going to start a master's program in education, and that was going to be in Eretz Yisrael, so we sent her back for a fourth year. She's on the plane, and pretty much that night, approximately, I'm not sure, but right at the end of the summer, I went to a wedding, and I sat down with somebody that I hardly ever chat with, who lived on the other side of town. But we sat next to each other at this wedding, and we were talking all about our children, and she told me about her three boys, her oldest son I knew, her youngest son I had met, but I didn't really know her middle son at all. He was going off to Israel for his fifth year at the Mir. Meanwhile, he was a camp counselor in a special adventure camp for teenage boys. So she's telling me how this is going to be her first year with no children at home and what she's planning on doing, all these programs and projects that she wants to complete in her first empty nest year. And I'm telling her about my children, and we have a great time at the wedding and go home. The next morning, I hear that her middle son was in a terrible car accident. He was camp counselor in this wilderness camp, and he was driving a van, 15-passenger van, with 12 campers and another counselor, pulling a trailer of four canoes, and the van went off the road and rolled, and everyone was injured. It was early in the morning. They were driving overnight, and they had just switched drivers. So he had been rested, but he took the wheel, and somehow the van rolled and rolled, and one of the campers was able to crawl out of the car accident and climb up the side of the road to flag down a car, to use a cell phone to call for help and flag down help. But it was really a very bad scene. Unfortunately, one of the campers was Nifter, and many of them were very injured, and her son, they didn't know if he would live or die. They just weren't sure. So news went out, of course, around our community right away, and everybody started davening, saying to him, we broke up the whole Sefer Tehillim. Everybody was davening for him. And she, of course, got on the next plane and flew from Denver, Colorado, out to Maine, which is about 2,000 miles away. So she flew to Maine. She went to the hospital to go see what's the story with this boy. She didn't know what would happen. And turns out they didn't even know the extent of his injuries. He was so injured. They had to put him into a coma just so that he couldn't move at all, so that they could then see what will be the next procedure. How will they heal him? What will they do? So it turns out that one of the hospitals in the United States, the best hospital for spinal cord injuries, is in Denver, Colorado. So they stabilized him, and then they put him on a special flight for life from Bangor, Maine, all the way to Denver. And when he landed in Denver in the helicopter, they put him in the hospital for a 100-day stay. And they still didn't know. I think they knew at the point if he would live, but they didn't know, was his brain injured? Just his spinal cord? Right now he couldn't move. He had broken bones. He couldn't breathe on his own. He couldn't eat on his own. Would he be able to recover from this or not? They just weren't sure. So they initiated the hospital stay, and slowly, slowly, they started to see what would happen. They did surgeries on him, and they started therapies, and they assessed, and it seemed, and they brought him slowly out of the coma, but he was in tremendous pain from all of the injuries that he had. But slowly, over a few weeks, they brought him out of his coma, and he started to wake up, and they realized that, Baruch Hashem, it didn't seem like he had cognitive damage. It didn't seem like his brain was injured, but clearly his spinal cord, and they didn't know if he would ever be able to move anything again. Slowly, they started to see, it's up 3 months in the hospital, and emails are going around about his health, and everybody's davening worldwide for this boy. He was one of the top students in the Mir. He loved to learn Torah, and yet, here he is now, just in the hospital, couldn't go back for his fifth year. But people are davening all over the world for him. And so now we had to see what would happen. I sent an email to the mother, if there's anything I can do to help, please let me know, but I didn't know, I wasn't sure, should I call her? Should I not call? We're not friends, but I chatted with her at that wedding, but I wanted to give her space. She's in so much pain over this whole thing. I mean, here she was going to have her first empty nest year, and now her child is back in her lap, probably for life. So I just wasn't sure. And then I wasn't sure, is it her pain I'm trying to protect or is it my pain? Maybe I don't want to make the call. Maybe I'm too shy to pick up the phone. I wasn't really sure like who I was protecting by not calling her, but I for sure sent an email. If you need anything, call me. You need meals, you need rides, you need anything, whatever you want, just give me a call. I didn't hear back. But a few weeks later, there was an email that came out and said, we parents need a break. If there's anybody who can go to the hospital for Shabbos, we just need to go home and rest for Shabbos. Could somebody please stay with them for Shabbos? So I said, for sure we can. That particular semester, all the kids were off in different places except for the youngest. So my husband and my youngest, Donnie, and I made all the food and we went to the hospital. I wasn't sure what it would be like in the hospital, so I went in advance Friday morning just to make sure I would know where to park and where to bring everything, check out the room, see where I'd plug things in and how I could make it work so we'd stay with him in the hospital. And it turns out they had a little apartment building behind the hospital for outpatients, so we stayed there. And then I went to meet him. And he was in his wheelchair, an electric wheelchair, tipped all the way back with his knees up. That's how I met him. So I walk into the room, and he looked over at me, and he said, what's up? And I said, your knees, I guess. I don't know. I was so uncomfortable. I thought, oh, why did I say that? That was so stupid. Your knees are up. I had to say that. Right? I just like, I don't know what to say. Here he is upside down in his wheelchair. So he moved himself back up. He said, it's such an interesting electric chair. He said, we call it power chairs. Electric chairs have a bad connotation. So electric chairs are used for whatever, for capital punishment, right? This is a power chair. I said, okay, a very nice power chair that you have. So then fortunately, one of his friends flew in also that Shabbos. So it was my husband, me, my youngest son, and his friend. So I'm, of course, looking at his friend. Think he's single, he's nice, displays chesed, flew in to visit his friend. I'm thinking about my daughter, of course, trying to find just the right boy. Right? He sings Zemiros, my daughter's so musical, he's singing away, he's telling Divrei Torah, he's making jokes. I thought, oh, he's musical, and he's kind, and he makes nice jokes, and he's friendly. That would be nice for Elisheva. I'll look into him. So, fine, that Shabbos passes, we get through it, make a little bit better friends, but he was still, Yehoshua, the patient, was still on a lot of medication. He couldn't even breathe and speak at the same time. I held the sitter for him while he davened Marv. I felt like a page turner for a piano concert, you know, I just listened and turned the pages for him, because he couldn't turn the pages on his own. But then he enjoyed us for Shabbos, and he asked his parents if we would come back. So 3 weeks later, we went back. And I saw 3 weeks later what a big difference there was. Then his medication was reduced. He had a lot more of attention span, a lot more personality was coming out. He really loved the learning. I saw that he was trying so hard, and he davened with kavanah. I still held the sitter for him. I saw how he davened. I thought, gosh, he's great. Too bad he's a quadriplegic. Too bad his body is broken and will never heal all the way, because if his body worked, he would be the one I would pick for Elisheva. Look how he's davening, and look how he's so friendly, and look how he loves learning. He's really great, but, you know, he's in this broken body. I would never consider it for my daughter. So, but then, that Shabbos was the Parsha of the Gita Nasha. So, and I brought my Rav Hirsch with me. And in Rav Hirsch, it says about the Gita Nasha, why don't we eat that Gita Nasha? Could it be because there was one fight between one of our Avos and a Malach, and that's the reason we don't eat that nerve until this very day? It must be more. So Rav Hirsch explains that it's because Yaakov was injured in the thigh, and he limped into history. And we don't eat that Gita Nasha to remind us, all of us, that our strength is not in our legs. Our strengths as Jews, as our neshama and our intellect, that's the gift we bring to the world, and we should never, ever think that our strength is physical, and always know that our strength is spiritual and emotional. So I read that, and I looked at Yehoshua, and I thought, right, here's somebody who has no strength in his legs at all, and yet look at his neshama, look at his intellect, look how he's engaging. But I still thought, too bad. He would be great for my daughter if he wasn't in a wheelchair. So I dismissed the thought, went on. But meanwhile, I saw he couldn't hold a book. And I had learned this special memory technique of how to access information in Sfarim. I learned from Rabbi Jonathan Rieti. and I wanted to teach it to him. So I was chutzpahdik. A ger, by the way, has to be a chutzpahdik person, because you can't really leave your family behind, leave what you were raised with behind, and step into a whole new nation if you don't have a lot of chutzpah. So Baruch Hashem, I do. I hope I use it for Kedusha, but I am chutzpahdik. So I told him, this mere student, I want to have a chavrusa with you. I said, I have something I want to teach you. He said, oh, that's nice. Okay. When I get out of the hospital and I start, you know, going to yeshiva again, if you want to arrange a chavrusa, give me a call then and we'll see. So I said, okay. I had no problem going to the Beis Medrash and learning with him. We learned outside the Beis Medrash, but I did call him when he got back to yeshiva. It's in my neighborhood. I had worked there before, so I was familiar with the Rabbanim and the yeshiva. And I made a chavrusa with him. And I went and I started to teach him this memory system. And the more I taught him, the more I really grew to like him. I brought him a muffin one day. He said, nope, can't eat that. I thought, why not? You ate my food before. Is it kashrus? He said, nope. He said, every calorie has to count. I have to eat like a champion. I can't gain any extra weight. I have to take very good care of my body. I can't let it get in my way any more than it already is. I thought, that's impressive. Plus, every time when we would learn, every half hour, he'd push his wheelchair back. His arms could move a little bit. He'd push the wheelchair back from the table, and he would lean all the way forward for 30 seconds and then push himself all the way back up. I said, why are you doing that? He said, it's called a weight shift. People who are in wheelchairs don't move like people who aren't in wheelchairs, and their fluids don't move through their bodies the same way, and that can cause the skin to break down. And if the skin breaks down and you get a sore, it could cause terrible infections. It could even cost your life. He said, so I'm very careful every 30 minutes to do a weight shift. And I saw, whenever I was with him, he was very careful. He watched the clock. He was very careful. He was eating carefully. He was moving carefully. He was learning carefully. He used his energy very carefully. Whenever I would call him, he would say, I can learn at this time. Or sometimes he would say, I really have to sleep at that time because I have to take care of my energy because I'm still healing. Okay, so but the more time I spent with him, the more it kept coming in my mind, he's like perfect for Eli Sheva, except he's a quadriplegic who would think such a crazy thought. So I kept pushing it away. But then I went to a wedding and I saw him dressed in a suit and he's in the wheelchair and people are coming over and saying, oh, Yeshua, you look so great. We're so happy to see you out of the hospital. He was able to even turn a little bit to greet people and he was eating. He could eat by himself now. We didn't have to feed him. When I first met him, he had to be fed. But now his arms had recovered enough that he could pick something up and eat it himself. Not all his fingers, but he can pick things up like that. So I watched him from the distance and I thought, you know, I'm the one who teaches all the time that it's the neshama, that you're trying to make a match of neshamas. Why should I, like, say that the body is the thing? The body, how long does that last anyway? 90 years? 120 years if you're really lucky? But the neshama's forever. So I'm looking at this neshama thinking, it really is the neshama for my daughter. I mean, Eli Sheva said I should find the right one for her. I think this is the right one, but I don't know. So I spoke to a friend who knew the mother. I said, would you mind just checking for me? I'm considering a possible shidduch. This friend knew my daughter and him. She's the sister-in-law of him. And I said, could you just check for me? I just need to know, like, how long is he expected to live? You know, with, like, this condition, is this 30 years? Is it 40 years? Is it 60, 70? How long? How long will he live? And who's paying for all the medical care? I need to know that too, because it's one thing to think about a shidduch, and it's another thing to think about my daughter having to pay for the medical care for life. And I wanted to know if he could be a father. So I had my friend ask those questions, and she came back. She told me that if he takes good care of his skin, he could easily live into his 80s. And I saw he takes very good care of his skin. And she said he was injured on the job. And it turns out that tiny summer camp that had two employees, I think just two that summer, they had paid for workman's compensation insurance, which means that if their employees were injured on the job, they were covered for life. So Baruch Hashem, that tiny Jewish summer camp paid that insurance premium. He was covered medically for life. Millions of dollars of care he needed. And he's covered for life. Fine. And I said, what about the other question? She said, I couldn't ask. I said, I need to know. She said, I couldn't ask. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to have to be unorthodox about this orthodox shidduch. I'm just going to have to call the mother directly and ask her myself. So I called her up and I said, Siri, has your son considered dating? She said, dating? Are you kidding me? He's 6 months after an accident. It's a 2-year recovery period. Of course he has to consider dating. No way he hasn't thought about dating. I said, well, I thought of a possible shidduch, but I don't know, could we talk about it? So we went out to eat, went out just for coffee at Starbucks, and we sat down and we discussed it, and I asked her some questions, and I explained to her why I thought my daughter might be a good shidduch, especially because she was so careful in always guarding her eyes and always guarding her ears. She didn't read even literature that many other girls were reading. She had no clue what marriage should look like. She just knew, I mean, she saw my husband and myself, she knew about a connection, but she had no clue about other things. And I thought, this is perfect, you know, for this, she can create her whole own path on her own. She doesn't have to follow anybody else's derech, but she's available for her whole own derech. Plus, I found out later, shidduch resumes, does anybody know what they are? So it turns out there's different shidduch resumes for from birth people that they are from BTs, right, from Baal Tshuvas. So I, turns out, even though my daughter's from birth, I wrote her a Baal Tshuva Shidduch resume. So Baal Tshuva Shidduch resumes have a paragraph, what you're looking for, and who you are, and then your information. From birth ones just have information. Right, so on hers, I had written, she has a sense of adventure, and musical, and kiruv, and Torah, and all that stuff. But one of the sentences was sense of adventure. And this was, she could see, this was this, a sense of adventure, something to do that was completely unusual, that she would be willing to look at this. So I called her before I called Sari, and I said, you know, remember how you said I should just find the right boy for you? Well, I think I found him, except for it's Yoshua Hoffman. You know, and she said, oh, the one I've been davening for every day? I said, yeah, the one who had the accident. I said, I met him, I've spent time with him, I really think he's a good match, but I just wanted to check with you, like, what would you think of such a thing? She said, well, I don't know, I would have some questions. She gave me a list of questions, which I asked Sari at that appointment. And Sari said, wow, it really looks like you've thought about this. I mean, your daughter's willing to consider it. I'll ask Yoshua if he's willing to consider dating. So she went home and she said, Yoshua, have you thought about dating? He said, dating? Are you kidding? No way, I haven't thought about it at all. She said, well, actually, there's a firm girl who's interested in you. He said, what? A firm girl? Does she know what happened to me? And she said, yeah, she does. And she's from? She said, yeah, she is. And she's interested? I said, well, yeah, she is. She says, I don't know. How could I think of dating? There's so many things I want to accomplish first. But it was Erev Purim, and she was coming home for Pesach. So I said, I just need to know. She said she would ask without the name, but I just need to know, could they just meet Pesach time, even if he's not ready, even if he needs to wait a year, they should at least meet so I should know, should I keep looking or not look? So he says, okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call my Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael, and I'm going to ask him, should I? So he called Rabbi Noach Orlowick, his Rebbe, and his Rebbe said, a firm girl's interested, and she knows what happened to you? I think you probably should meet her, but I'll tell you what, she's in Eretz Yisrael, I'm in Eretz Yisrael, I'll meet her first. I'll let you know. So Rabbi Orlowick made an appointment with Elisheva. And Elisheva went to meet Rabbi Orlowick, and they talked for an hour. And at the end of the hour, he said to her, it's a good match. She said, so you mean if we go out and we click, it's a good match? Just like I had taught her, right? And he said, no, that's not what I mean. What I mean is, it's a good match. Don't meet him unless you're ready to move forward. He said, and now do you have any questions for me? She said, well, I actually have a friend who was sick, and she got engaged. She got better, but then she got engaged, and the engagement was almost called off because they found out that she was sick, but she wasn't really sick, she was better, and I learned from that sick doesn't get engaged to healthy, and I don't know, like, I'm healthy, and is he sick, and should I even consider a shidduch like this? I'm just not sure. So he looked at her, and he said, I love Yehoshua way too much to answer that question for you. All I can tell you is it's a good match. Now you have to go to some place quiet and decide if you can go forward with this or not. So she anyway used to go to Kevar Rachel once a week and the Kotel once a week. Now she was at the Kotel every day, Kevar Rachel twice a week, davening, 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 can I, should I, thinking, thinking, thinking. And she finally came back to me and said, Ima, I think I do want to meet him. The next day, it was about 10 days before Pesach, before she was going to come home, the next day, my boss from Israel called me up. said, Aliza, somebody thought I'm a shadchan, but I'm not a shadchan. But this boy called me up. He's from Australia. He's 24 years old. He has a college degree. He's very frum. He loves to learn. He's into Kiruv. He's musical. I just thought of your daughter. I thought it would be terrific. I said, wow, that really does sound nice, but I'm working on something right now. She said, well, he's in Eretz Yisrael. You might as well let her meet him before she goes back for Pesach. So I called up Elisheva and I said, Elisheva, Mrs. Levine called. And she said, this nice boy, 24 years old, college degree, he's into Kiruv, he's musical, he's funny, he's friendly, you know, just kind of what you were looking for. Do you want to meet him? She said, I don't know. I said, well, maybe you could meet him once while you're in Eretz Yisrael, and then you'll come back and you'll meet Yeshua. She said, I don't know. She said, I really think I want to meet Yehoshua first. So I was thankful for that. At least something had been offered in between. And she came back to the States, and Yehoshua agreed that they were going to meet. So they both hated dating, it turns out. They both went out a few times, and they hated the process. So they decided the first date is the worst. You have to dress up so fancy, it's so uncomfortable, very formal. So they decided they're going to skip the first date and start with a second. So that's what they did. They skipped the first date, and they started with a second date, which means they could dress less formal, and they met in a coffee shop. So his mother dressed him up, because he can't dress himself, and she got dressed too, and they met in the coffee shop. He dropped her off first, and then she walked in. It was easy to identify the right one, right, because the guy with the wheels. So it's not like in a hotel lobby where you're not really sure. I've heard of many matches that have happened in hotel lobbies where somebody walks over and says, hello, are you Malki? And she is Malki, but not the Malki he was supposed to meet. So that didn't happen here. It was very clear who she was supposed to meet. So he put money on the table and he said, please get yourself a drink, because he couldn't do it for her. So he just wanted to put it on the table right away. I can't do for you. I could pay for it, but I can't do for you. So she went and she got drinks and they sat down and they had a lovely time. They chatted for an hour. He was still recovering and it's a 2-year recovery process. This was only 7 months after the accident. He was still tired a lot. So he had to go home. Fine. They decide they're going to date 3 times before they decide if they'll date a fourth. So they're going to date 3 times whether they like it or not. And it's just going to be to decide if they want to date a fourth time. So they did date 3 times. And the second date, they went to a paint-your-own-pottery place where they painted things. And she asked him, what name should I write for you on the bottom of it? He said, write Superman, because Superman also was in a wheelchair, the actor Superman. So she did. The third date, they went to a park, and she actually, at this time, picked him up. She drove to the house, and then she tried to she drove the special van that they had made for him. So she learned how to take the chair up the ramp, into the van, click it in, and put it in place, and then they drove and they had a picnic and came back and she was able to take him down the ramp and see what it would be like. Okay, 3 dates. It's going great. His mother calls me and says, okay, this is fine, this little romance that they're having, and they didn't even address each other by first name, ever. You know, I didn't even know that was a thing, but I learned from them not to address by the first name, and they didn't. But then his mother, Sari, said, okay, I want to meet you and your daughter. We have to go out. We have to discuss this. So we went out, and she looked at her, and she said, very nice that you're interested in my son now, but let's just go through a day. Let me tell you what it looks like. And she went through from morning till evening and told her everything that happens. And Baruch Hashem, because he was injured on the job and because there was insurance money, he's able to have a private tech come to the house twice a day to take care of private things. So somebody else dressed him and brushed his teeth and all the things that need to be done. But she wanted to let her know what it is that needs to be done so that she'd be aware. Occasionally a tech can come. Maybe there's a snowstorm. Maybe whatever it is, a car breaks down and she would have to do it. She wanted her to know this is what it is to live with this boy. Okay, she says, no problem. She says, what do you mean no problem? She says, I think I could handle that. She says, what do you mean you think you could handle it? She says, I think I'm willing to do that. She said, okay, then I give you permission to go on a fourth date. So they went on a fourth date, and by the fifth, I'm not an eavesdropping mother at all. But I have to say, I was in the hallway just walking across the hall when I hear the two sisters in the bedroom just lying there chatting. You know, so the younger sister, Sarah, said,
Elisheva, if he asked you, what would you say? He said, I would say yes.
So I knew, even though I knew from talking to her, but I knew she was ready. So I spoke to Yoshua, and I said, I just, no pressure at all. Totally take your time. It's an important decision. I just need to know, should I make her ticket longer? She's going back right after Pesach. Should I extend her ticket or keep it in the same place? So he said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, if you need more time to make a decision, I would extend the ticket. If you know yes or no already, then she can go back at that time. He said, well, how is she feeling? I said, well, I think she's feeling like a yes. He said, well, you don't need to extend the ticket then. So I knew the sixth date was going to be it, right? So he picks her up. It's Pesach, Chol Hamoed Pesach. He picks her up in a way that she goes out to pick him up, and off she drives. So we're all acting nonchalant, you know, like nothing. Now, it turns out I have a almost Hasidish daughter-in-law. She comes from a Ger family, but the whole family is not quite Hasidish anymore, but a little. But she knows enough to know that I don't know, and she's my teacher, right? So she says, as soon as Elisha leaves, she says, I'm so excited. I said, you are? She said, yes. She said, Ellie's going to get engaged. You know what that means? I said, yes, I know what that means. There's going to be a wedding. She says, oh, no. It means there's going to be a fort. It means there's going to be a l'chaim. Ima. I said, well, what do you mean? She said, Ima, don't tell me you didn't call people already. I said, no, I didn't. She said, if there's a l'chaim, if she gets engaged, there has to be people here to greet her. You have to know who to call. So, fine. So, actually, I forgot this conversation happened the night before. So, I did call Yoshua, and I said, in case there's a mazel tov tomorrow, who might you want on hand to greet you with the mazel tov? So, he gave me the names of the Rosh Yeshiva and the teachers that were important to him. So, as soon as she pulled away from the driveway, I called the Rosh Yeshiva, and I called the teachers, and I said, in case I need you this afternoon at 5 o'clock, might you just set that time aside in your schedule? Fine. So they said, fine. Okay. They didn't know what was going on, but they knew enough to know, right? Baruch Hashem is Chol Hamoed Pesach. Nobody eats each other's food Pesach, so all I had to do was like have wine and clementines and grapes. There's no baking. So we set up the whole house, got it all decorated already, and we're waiting. My daughter-in-law was on bed rest. We're all around. She and I set up a bed for her in my house. Oh, waiting. Finally, the phone rings, call, mazel tov, it's thrilling. That's so not the end of the story, so don't think we're done yet. So there's a huge mazel tov, right? We're all upset, all the girls are screaming, and it's so much fun, and they're having such a great time. Right away, the rabbi heard, he called me right away before, like, I don't even know how he heard. They just hung up with us, and he's already calling with the mazel tov. He must have seen them or something. Okay, so then word starts to spread around the world. So all Yehoshua's friends are thrilled. The whole Hoffman family is getting mazel tov from Eretz Yisrael, from Europe, from all across America. Everybody's been davening for, wow, Yehoshua's engaged. That's fabulous. And then Elisheva, who was 21 already, so it's old, you know. So people were worried. So, wow, Elisheva Bila's engaged. That's fabulous. What? To Yehoshua Hoffman? Oh my gosh, are you kidding? Really? Doesn't your mother know that he's handicapped? You know, and my younger son, the one underneath her, married the Hasidisha girl, so they got married very young. So he'd been married for a few years. Everybody started talking to him, right? I can't believe your mother made such a decision. What's wrong with your sister? What is your mother thinking? How could it be? How did your mother make such a match? And all this back channel conversation starts to come. That Shabbos, as I started to hear all this conversation, I was walking home from shul with a beautiful young married woman, and she looked at me, and I knew her marriage wasn't in the best shape, and she looked at me and she said, I really understand you making this shidduch. You know, she told me, I was matched with my husband because we're both very good looking, but it wasn't really the best way to match us up. She said, I really understand you matching your daughter with somebody she could talk to. I really get it. I said, thank you so much for telling me that. I can't tell you how much chesed that gives me because so many people are second-guessing my choice. You know, and I feel like it's such a good match. But people are asking me, what's wrong with my daughter? Why did I make a shidduch like this? She says, I can't believe people are asking you that. Nothing is wrong with her, right? So I started to get tons of questions. People came over to me, and they mazel tov me, but they said, like, how are they going to manage? How will they live their lives? They had so many questions, as if it's their business to know all the details of their life. But people would ask me questions, and I went home and I started to think, I wish I would have said this, I wish I would have said that. But finally, I had the opportunity to say the sum of the I wish I saids, right? So somebody came over to me, and she looked at me, and she said, oh, will they be able to lead a normal life? So I said, no, they won't. And that's the whole point. They don't want to be normal. They're not going to lead a normal life. They're not headed for normal. They're going to lead an extraordinary life. That's who they want to be, is extraordinary. Why should we aim for normal? We're Jews. We're meant to be extraordinary. We're supposed to be very special. Both of them realize that. They're making a shidduch with their neshamas, not with their bodies. They get it. This is just a short period. This, we're just moving through. We just wear a body for a short period of time, but it's the neshamas that's the real match. No, they're going to be extraordinary. Nothing to do with ordinary at all. So that's why I like to tell this story, because I want to let us all know we have to look at ourselves and say, who could we be? Who are we? Are we the body that's on the outside? We know that we're a neshama before we're born, and we're a neshama after we die. So why put this body on for 90 or 120 years and then move around in this physical world? It's also, we could change our neshama. The whole purpose is to exit differently than we entered. And so every physical thing that we do is all about how could we grow through this. And Baruch Hashem, when I saw the title, I was thinking, my daughter's not so ordinary, because she got it at 21. It's all about how can we grow through this. And the two of them are partners in how can we grow through this. How can we become who we're supposed to be with what we've been given? We're not supposed to be somebody else and try to use somebody else's gifts. Our gifts, or what looks like our klalas even, are really our gifts. They're all invitations. Hashem says, please, come grow with me. I like to see it sometimes that Hashem creates custom-designed workshops for us. And he says, your neshama's at this level, but I would like to see it be here. So what I'm going to do is create a custom-designed workshop for you, and I invite you to attend. Sometimes we say, I'm not so interested in that workshop. It doesn't look so good to me. It looks really hard. So then Hashem gives a little zets from behind and says, well, I decided you should be in it. So we do all have bitter things that we need to face, difficult things. But hopefully we could see them as invitations to grow. And I'm so thankful that my daughter really brought this into my life. She's been married for 3.5 years now. They're still waiting for children. So anybody who wants to put them on their tefillah lists, I'll just say their names, Elisheva Chana, Bat Eliza Shoshana, and Yehoshua Meshulam Ben Saraleah. They should be benched with children, Bakarov, and everybody else who's waiting for children too. We need to see all kinds of Yeshuas, so we should be benched with Yeshuas as a klal. But I'm very thankful to be the mother and to watch this couple grow and to learn really from the halakhite that they exude. I mean, Motzei Shabbos, she lights 2 candles, and they sit. They play a game, they read a story, they learn some Torah. But just, they understand, like, just, it's very, they're very betant, very behind, a beautiful couple growing. And you can see the shine in their faces as they grow as a couple. And he's now, he learns 2 starim a day. She teaches in public school. So interesting to watch her teach because she's very tamimistic. So I don't know if I should. She's with her interface with the outside world. She sometimes bumps up against. She's in a public school, right? So she sometimes bumps up against concepts she hasn't heard of or really understood before, and she comes to me to try to explain some of those things, so that she doesn't hurt the children's feelings, especially around holiday times. She has hurt some feelings because she didn't understand how important a concept might be to a younger child. But I just see them growing and growing and really living a life of becoming extraordinary, but not with bells and whistles. They're not stars on a stage somewhere. They're not in the world that anybody could really see. It's the quiet, inner, still voice of, I could be so much more than this, and I'm going to try my very best to grow quietly in my own orbit, in my own life, in my own marriage, in my own neighborhood, in my own community. How can I become the strongest, the best I want to be? So I'd like to invite all of you who are here tonight, involved in this beautiful mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, but all of you to grow through that mitzvah and to grow your own neshamas, to really say, who could I be? Why should I ever, ever settle for normal? How about if I set my sights on extraordinary? We could all be truly amazing. So I bench us all that we should grow into being truly amazing, a light unto each other and a light into the whole world. The whole world should be benched through us, Mirtz Hashem.
Should I take questions?
What an amazing, amazing story. I really have no words.
It's still all over.
It really joins me. And this thing, I'm sure they should build a base and everyone will destroy it. I wish they should have a lot of nachas from them. And what about, does anybody want to ask me a question? I'm sure there are so many questions. Sorry? Repeat the name and we want to double, and we will write down the name. So
okay, great. So okay. Elisheva Chana, Bas Eliza Shoshana, and Yehoshua Meshulam, Ben Saraleya. And if you have other questions, I'm happy to answer questions. We have a few minutes. Really, I have 2.5 minutes, right? Don't I? To be on time? There's 2.5 more minutes left? Right, I have 2.5 minutes. That's like 3 or 4 questions. Anybody want to ask anything? Yes. Pardon? Where do I live? I live in Denver, Colorado.
Oh, that's how you
could
go to the hospital because that's
where I messed that up and I didn't say yes. I live in Denver and his family lives in Denver and we're both of these children. One of the reasons why I thought it was a good shidduch is because both the parents are Baalei Tshuva. I sort of think of myself as a Baal Tshuva because I became from so young. So both the sets of parents are Baalei Tshuva, but these are both the right-wing child of their broad-thinking, eclectic kinds of families. So I thought they come from a similar background, but they also have a similar outlook on Torah and where they wanted to head. So yes, we live in the same city, in Denver. What else? Pardon? Okay. Well, you're going to have to ask me back again, aren't you? Because it's a whole long conversation, what inspired me to become from. That's a whole long talk, and I would love to share it with you. So I'm not angling for another invitation to this, because you should have different speakers that keep you excited. But I have a great story, and I'd be happy to tell it. But I have to just, the quick answer is, it was definitely Hisarusa de la Ela. I had nothing to do with it. I was definitely seeking meaning in my life. But I was a child, you know, and when I look back on it, I can't even believe that I did it. Now, so they say we live our lives forward, but we understand our lives backwards, looking backwards. So looking backwards, I can see all kinds of different things. I didn't see you moving forward. But at 10, I became an atheist, and at 14, I decided I believed in God. And shortly thereafter, I decided I should find a religion that works for me. I didn't know any Jews. So I just went to the library, and I read about different religions. And when I read the book, To Be a Jew, it was 1978, there weren't very many books in English at the time about Judaism, but I read the book, To Be a Jew, and it had everything I was looking for. It had Hashem, it had holidays, ceremonies, meaning, and I just decided that's what I wanted. And so I started to keep whatever I could from the book. So I'll just tell you even like little things that had the Shema in it. So it said, to, you know, say these words, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. I memorized it in English. With and then I memorized the transliteration in Hebrew, but it says, write these words on the doorposts of your home, right? So I didn't have a home, I was a child, I had a bedroom though, so I took a black magic marker and I wrote on the doorpost of my bedroom door, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. So that was the beginning of my journey, and you'll have to hear the rest of the story another time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay.